Welcome to the June 2026 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear member and fellow maritime professionals, when I first took up my role as CEO all those years ago, it never dawned on me that I would make so many good and lasting business friendships with many IIAMS members. But at last month's Western Mediterranean Large Yacht and Small Craft Working Group, held at Palma, Mallorca, it was like being back amongst old friends, and it was great to catch up with familiar faces. This working group meets annually and has been doing so for many years, and although the attendees are usually recognizable individuals, with a few newbies turning up, there is always so much to talk about and share, as was the case this time. This networking and its importance, bringing surveyors together, can't be overstressed. In my opening comments, I said that it felt like coming home at the end of a long day and easing into my favorite pair of old slippers. It was an excellent event, and I am grateful to all who contributed over the 2 days. Announcing awards and recognizing exceptional contributions to the marine surveying profession are always pleasing. So, in my introduction to this month's news bulletin, I have pleasure in announcing 3 honors. In no order of preference, IIAMS has recognized the contribution of 3 exceptional maritime professionals. They are Nigel Cox, who has been awarded a fellowship, Joel Lloyd Pinero, who also becomes a fellow, and Joe McWilliam, who has been given an honorary fellowship. You can read the citations for the aforementioned men in our online news bulletin, and they will be formally recognized at the IIAMS annual general meeting scheduled for Tuesday, 2nd of June. There's still time, just to make arrangements for that event, and I hope you will consider joining us from 2 to 4 p.m. UK time, as we broadcast live from Murrell's house. There's no need to register, and it is a great opportunity to better understand the inner workings of the Institute. All are welcome to attend. You can also find out more, including the login details, in our online news bulletin. One of the items and initiatives I plan to announce at the AGM relates to the specializations that are published on each individual's listing on the IIAMS Surveyor Search app and website search. Primarily, I have 2 concerns. The first is that when someone searches for a surveyor, the information displayed should be accurate. And in some cases, it is not. The management board has determined that the term specializations is to be withdrawn. It will be replaced by the term surveying experience. By that, we mean the types of surveying activities that are regularly undertaken by a member on a daily or regular basis, and not those that they may occasionally undertake from time to time. It is important for the Institute to do all it can to make the search results accurate. The second point is about the surveyor's own reputation. By effectively advertising a surveying activity through the IIAMS search facilities that is no longer within their scope, it could lead to personal reputational damage. So, if you are an IIAMS member with specifications on your listing that you have not reviewed and updated for a considerable time, you are urged to do the responsible thing and check as soon as possible. It may be that there are some activities you are no longer engaged in and others that you have now acquired the skills to do. And my final thoughts on this year's upcoming AGM. We are changing presidents. After 2 years as president, it is time for Captain Ruchendale to pull up his anchor and sail forth. Mike Proudlove will assume the mantle of president, and David Pestridge moves up to vice president. I would like to put on record my personal thanks to Ruchin, but also on behalf of IIAMS members too. He has been great to work with and has greatly contributed to the IIAMS over the past 2 years. The month of June remains one of the busiest in the IIAMS calendar, and this year is no different. Tomorrow's AGM is preceded by the quarterly management board meeting that morning. The following week we have a stand at the SeaWork show in Southampton. I hope to meet many members on our space on the Workboat Association stand, Hall 3, stand number WB6. Please do come and say hello, and our friends at the Workboat Association may even be able to rustle up a complimentary cup of coffee. From there we head straight into our DNV, ISO 9001 annual audit. Usually a one-day affair, this year we have chosen to enhance our certification to bring our certifying authority into scope. That adds another level of auditing and complexity, so we have 2.5 days to get through this year. And finally, many congratulations to IIAMS Membership Secretary, Rachel Moores, who got married last month to Brad. From now on going forward, she is known as Rachel Locke. Survey well, Mike. For our first story, finishing in under 6 hours, IIAMS member Catherine Lindley ran the virtual London Marathon My Way in support of Sailors Society, our chosen charity. Catherine said, I am a professional mariner who no longer works at sea. I know what it means to work long hours, far from home, keeping a global system moving that most people rarely notice. World trade depends on maintaining a skilled, resilient pipeline of seafarers. And seafarers depend on having the right support to do their jobs safely, sustainably and with dignity. That is why we chose to run this marathon in support of Sailors Society. Thank you for all you do for the seafarers. Sailors Society is now gearing up for its Fansipan challenge later this year. The aim of this challenging trek is the summit of Fansipan at 3,147 meters, the highest mountain in Vietnam. This two-day trek is open to maritime professionals and takes place in November. You can help Catherine hit her fundraising target and find out more about the Fansipan challenge via the news page of our website. Up next, a $30,000 off-spec grain cargo claim directed at the wrong surveyor has prompted International Transport Intermediaries Club to warn marine surveyors of the liability exposure they face when the scope of their instructions is not precisely recorded. A marine surveyor was appointed by the seller of a grain cargo to conduct a joint survey at the load port. The buyer accepted the cargo and subsequently sold it on. At the discharge port, the ultimate buyer and consignee alleged the grain was off-spec due to the presence of ambrosia seed and other impurities. After the cargo was resold at a discount, the original buyer pursued a loss of $30,000, first from the seller and then from the seller's surveyor, alleging the joint survey had been negligently conducted due to a failure to test for specific parameters. During its review, ITIC found that the surveyor had acted strictly within the scope of the instructions provided by the seller. Critically, the buyer had appointed its own surveyor to attend the joint survey, operating under a separate and different set of instructions. The seller's surveyor owed no duty of care to the buyer. The claim was misdirected and there were no grounds for legal action. ITIC has urged surveyors to ensure their scope of engagement is agreed and confirmed in writing before work begins, and that survey reports state explicitly not only what was tested but what fell outside the agreed parameters. In our next report, IAX finds common failure modes in emergency generator systems. After the loss of power leading up to the MV Dali Francis Scott Key bridge strike, marine casualty investigators noted an extended delay in the automatic startup of the ship's emergency generator. While the small generator was not sufficient in itself to run most major systems, it could provide low-speed hydraulic power to turn the rudder slowly, and could have provided that vital capability much sooner if it had started within standard time parameters, illustrating the importance of automated emergency power startup. After the casualty, the National Transportation Safety Board asked the International Association of Class Societies to review emergency generator startup with members. Separately, the Tokyo MOU also raised concerns about the reliability of standard generator startup testing procedures involving simulated blackouts. In response to the PSC inspection MOU's request, IAX completed a fleet-wide review via a concentrated inspection campaign, and it uncovered a small but meaningful number of deficiencies. Out of about 37,000 ships inspected across the global fleet, no issues were found with emergency power supply systems in about 98% of all cases. The remaining 2%, about 850 ships, showed a pattern of issues that IAX plans to incorporate into its compliance guidance. Critical and recurring points of failure included closing quick closing valves, PCB control circuits, and emergency diesel generator starting arrangements. You can read the full report at iacs.org.uk. Next, in 2025, the Tokyo MOU carried out 35,546 inspections, the highest number of inspections conducted in its history. The Tokyo MOU, PSC Annual Report 2025 added that, following last year, the detention rate continued the decreasing trend in 2025, however, it has not yet returned to the same level as the pre-pandemic period. In 2025, 35,546 inspections, involving 19,980 individual ships, were carried out on ships registered under 111 flags. Out of those inspections, there were 23,230 inspections where ships were found with deficiencies. Since the total number of individual ships operating in the region was estimated at 30,046, the inspection rate in the region was approximately 66% in 2025. A total of 90,168 deficiencies were recorded in 2025. Fire safety measures, life-saving appliances, working and living conditions and safety of navigation remain as the major categories of deficiencies frequently discovered on ships. In 2025, 18,020 deficiencies related to fire safety measures, 11,818 deficiencies related to life-saving appliances, 9,108 deficiencies related to working and living conditions and 8,936 deficiencies related to safety of navigation were recorded, representing 53% of the total number of all recorded deficiencies. As the outcome of the CIC on ballast water management in 2025, number of deficiencies relating to BWM were 3 times higher than that of the previous year. Furthermore, it is also observed that deficiencies related to structure conditions, water weather tight conditions, emergency systems and propulsion and auxiliary machinery were found increased continuously during past years. You can read the full report at www.tokyo-mou.org. Up next, machinery damage and fires continue to dominate as the leading causes of elevated claim costs in the Nordic marine insurance market, according to the Nordic Association of Marine Insurers, KEVA. KEVA members underwrite hull and machinery for about 31% of the world fleet, including 3,538 vessels of more than 20,000 gross tons. 2025 is the third consecutive year to record an increase in claims above $10 million, according to the year's report. Notably, total losses on vessels with values above $10 million have also been on the increase. This is rather unusual as total losses historically have occurred on low-value vessels. These substantial losses have seen claim cost per vessel increase by 33% in 2024 and 2025 compared to 2021. In 2025, there were 13 claims of above $10 million, slightly lower than 18 reported in 2024. Fires dominate these high-value losses, constituting 7 out of the 13 claims in 2025. In 6 of the past 10 years, fires accounted for 40 to 70% of the costliest losses, increasingly affecting even younger vessels. The frequency of machinery claims is also 30% higher in the period from 2022 to 2025 compared to prior years. KEVA said that the rise in machinery damage could be seen in the context of an aging fleet. It is also coded as human error, which could be linked to crew shortages. 7 out of 18 claims above $10 million in 2024 were machinery claims, the same number as the total count over the previous 6 years. But even as fires and machinery damage drive up claims cost, inflation is another silent factor. Following the pandemic, inflation rates in major economies have been on the rise. As a result, steel prices, the cost of spare parts and labor costs have all surged, influencing repair costs. In our next segment, a failed O-ring seal on a bulk carrier's composite boiler unit lead caused a fire costing more than $5 million in damage, said an investigation report by the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. On January 4, 2025, bulk cargo vessel Lem Verbena was docked at the Alabama State Docks on the Mobile River in Mobile, Alabama, with 19 crew members on board when a fire started in the engine room. The crew activated the vessel's carbon dioxide fixed fire extinguishing system. Shoreside firefighters later determined the fire had been extinguished. There were no injuries, and no pollution was reported. Damage to the vessel was estimated at $5.5 million. The NTSB determined that the probable cause of the fire on the bulk carrier Lem Verbena was the failure of an O-ring seal on the composite boiler burner unit oil fittings block due to the radial misalignment of the two fuel ports on the block modules, causing pressurized diesel fuel to atomize and ignite on a nearby hot surface. You can read the full report at www.ntsb.gov. Next, the CHIRP Annual Digest 2025-2026 has been published. It highlights the continued need for vigilance as both traditional and emerging risks shape safety at sea. The digest reveals that the organization received 330 reports concerning safety, welfare, and compliance issues across all sectors, including commercial shipping, superyachts, fishing, pilotage, offshore installations, ports, search and rescue units, recreational vessels, and the shadow fleet. While emerging risks such as unmanned surface vessels and dark fleet operations are increasingly reported, traditional hazards remain persistent, including enclosed space incidents, unsafe pilot boarding arrangements, and slips, trips, and falls. Long-standing safety issues remain a feature, including inadequate training, unsafe pilot ladders, poor mooring arrangements, and machinery-related incidents. It also emphasized the importance of balancing commercial pressure with safety, noting that safety should never be compromised for convenience. You can read the document at chirp.co.uk. For our next report, the volume of seaborne cement traded continues to grow, with the most recent annual figure estimated to be over 145 million tons. Cement is carried on board ships either in bulk or in bags. And Britannia P&I Club's loss prevention team has provided guidance on the carriage of cement, which you can read in detail at britanniapni.com. Up next, DNV has provided a short summary of how to document compliance at the first safety equipment survey after the 1st of January 2026, given that all fire-extinguishing foams on board must be PFOS-free, and this must be verified by the attending surveyor. From January 1, 2026, the use or storage of fire-extinguishing media, including firefighting foams, containing perfluorooctane sulfonic acid is prohibited. This applies to both fixed and portable systems and equipment. The requirement to document PFOS-free fire-extinguishing foams applies to all types of foam on board, i.e., both fixed systems and portable equipment. Compliance will prevent part-held surveys and/or conditions of authority. Briefly summarized, there are three ways to document PFOS-free foam. 1. A PFOS-free declaration is provided by the manufacturer of the foam. 2. The foam can be sampled and tested according to a recognized standard by an accredited laboratory and concluded to be PFOS-free through a laboratory test report confirming that the PFOS concentration in the foam is below 10 mg per kg, 0.001% by weight. And 3. Although not required, the Type Approval or Marine Equipment Directive certificate for the foam may state that it is PFOS-free. If this is the case, it is considered equivalent to a PFOS-free declaration. You can find the full report at www.dnv.com. For our next report, a corroded cooling supply pipe caused $1 million worth of damage to a sailing school ship after the vessel's engine room flooded, according to the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. On May 10, 2025, the sailing school vessel Oliver Hazard Perry started taking on water while moored at Fort Adams State Park Dock in Newport, Rhode Island. At about 07:30 the following morning, a crew member was awoken by an alarm and discovered the flooding. An estimated 21,000 gallons of seawater entered the engine room and the forward auxiliary machine space. There were no injuries, and no pollution was reported. Damage to the vessel was estimated at $1 million. The NTSB determined that the probable cause of the engine room flooding aboard the sailing school vessel Oliver Hazard Perry was a failed seawater cooling supply pipe for a diesel engine-driven generator due to corrosion. Contributing to the extent of the damage was the lack of a bilge alarm annunciator in the accommodation spaces to alert onboard crew members to the flooding and a watertight bulkhead and watertight door that did not prevent progressive flooding. You can find the report via www.iamsusa.com. Next, as cruise operators explore pathways to reduce emissions and improve energy efficiency, batteries are emerging as a pragmatic part of the solution. DNV has shared a fact-based interview featuring Hild Bolstad, DNV's principal consultant of alternative fuels and GHG compliance, on how batteries fit into cruise vessel design and operation. This interview answers questions on the current application levels of different battery sizes, the developments to watch, and the considerations that matter when planning larger installations. You can find the interview on DNV's website. Next, sea trials in the Firth of Forth, Scotland that ended in catastrophic engine failure and a fire on board a vessel last year was caused by substitute components, said a report by the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch. At 13:05 on the 25th of January 2025, the site investigation vessel Commander Susan suffered a catastrophic failure of a diesel generator engine while conducting sea trials in the Firth of Forth, Scotland. The failure resulted in an engine room fire and a complete power blackout. The crew responded promptly, extinguishing the fire and mustering safely. The vessel lost propulsion and began drifting eastwards. Attempts to deploy anchors were unsuccessful because the anchor winches required electrical power to operate. Commander Susan was eventually returned to Leith Harbour with limited propulsion restored. Safety issues included use of non-genuine engine components during a major overhaul in 2019, approval of extended service intervals, which assumed use of genuine components, and a shortfall in oversight and contractor assurance by the vessel owner during overhaul, which allowed the non-genuine components to be installed. You can find the full report via www.iams.org.uk. For our next segment, internal corrosion of a crane wire caused $3.8 million in damage to offshore construction vessel Island Venture and offshore supply vessel Sea Enforcer at Port Fourchon, according to the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. On April 3, 2025, about 21:45 local time, the offshore construction vessel Island Ventures crane was being used to lift a wire reel from the back deck of the offshore supply vessel Sea Enforcer in Bayou Lafourche, Port Fourchon, Louisiana, when the crane's hoisting wire parted, causing the reel to drop onto the Sea Enforcer's main deck. There were no injuries, and no pollution was reported. At the request of Edison Tuist Offshore, on April 4, a damage surveyor boarded the Sea Enforcer to assess the damage to the vessel. The surveyor's preliminary report noted damage to the main deck plating, deck boards, upper framing of engine room, beneath the main deck, various upper engine room piping, and the upper portion of a liquid mud tank. After the casualty, Coast Guard and NTSB investigators visually examined the parted hoisting wire and the remaining wire on board Island Venture. The hoisting wire showed internal and external oxidation. The outside diameter of the wire had minimum and intermittent aged lubrication grease coverage throughout the length. The NTSB determined that the probable cause of the failure of the hoisting wire on the offshore construction vessel Island Ventures crane was internal corrosion of the crane's hoisting wire. You can find the full report via the IIAMS USA website. Next, we've included a short segment from Safety Helmets, When Standards Fail Stevedores and Crews by Captain Glenn Mathias. On the 2nd of May 2019, a twist lock fitted to one of the bottom corner fittings of a container fell out of the fitting while the container was being restowed aboard the container vessel Mol Bravo, in the port of Manzanillo, Mexico. The twist lock landed on the second officer who was on deck, struck his safety helmet and caused fatal injuries. The investigation report by the Marine Department of Hong Kong noted the following. The second officer failed to follow the company safety procedures to stay away from the hazardous zone underneath the container while it was being restowed by a gantry crane. Although the second officer should not have been standing under a container being loaded onto the vessel, the safety helmet was required to protect him from the falling twist lock. The helmet did not provide adequate protection for this hazard. For those unfamiliar, a twist lock is a steel device inserted into the bottom corner fittings of containers, designed to lock containers in a vertical stack. This article is not concerned with the competence of vessel officers examining twist locks or of pinmen who attach twist locks to the bottom corner fittings of containers. Their work involves recognizing defective twist locks and corner fittings. Once detected, pinmen are expected to reject defective twist locks and ensure containers with defective corner fittings are not loaded onto the vessel. The urgent need for safety helmets. Instead, this article deals with the urgent need for safety helmets used by crew and stevedores involved in container vessel operations to be fit for purpose. This requires safety helmets to be redesigned so they can protect the wearer from the energy and force of a falling twist lock, hereinafter referred to as a redesigned safety helmet. Such a safety helmet would provide protection even in cases where human error occurs. The second officer's safety helmet could not protect him against the falling twist lock because it was not designed to withstand the impact energy and force involved. You can continue to read the full article at iiams.org.uk/news. Up next, an increasing number of people are being injured in fall-related incidents on board passenger ships operating along the Norwegian coast, according to the Norwegian Maritime Authority. Following a decline in 2023, when fall prevention was a key focus area for the NMA, the trend has now reversed, and incidents are rising again. Falls are among the most common causes of sickness absence on passenger ships along the Norwegian coastline. When injuries result in absence from work, the need for medical treatment and higher costs, this affects not only the individual employee, but also companies and society as a whole. In January, February and March this year, 20 fall incidents were recorded. If this trend continues, 2026 could see a further increase. After a marked rise in fall accidents from 2020 onwards, prevention of such incidents became a dedicated focus area in the NMA's safety work in 2023. Increased attention and targeted measures led to fewer incidents that year, but the number has since increased again. The NMA's review and follow-up of incidents show that several common factors are involved. The most frequent causes of fall incidents include breaches of procedures, inadequate anti-slip measures, unsuitable footwear, and work carried out under time pressure. The NMA therefore emphasizes the importance of systematic prevention, a strong safety culture and compliance with procedures and routines to reverse this trend. In the next segment, Sailors Society has published its latest cadet report, the first digital seafarer generation. Sponsored by Inmarsat Maritime, a Viasat company, the report captures the voices of cadets, ratings and trainees from 30 countries. The report provides comprehensive insight into three key themes shaping maritime's newest recruits: digital life and social pressure, mental health and trauma at sea, and confidence in safety and reporting systems. You can download the report at sailors-society.org. Next, fire incidents on ships rank among the most frequent accidents, and in recent years, fire incidents have specially increased among container and ro-ro cargo, passenger ships. And DNV has supported many cases of post-fire structural and material assessments. The incidents have ranged from isolated small-scale fires in cargo holds to major fires damaging the complete ship. The fire incidents have identified the need for prompt decision-making in situations where time pressure is high and the crew, cargo and environment are at stake. The situations have involved discussions on whether the ship can continue trading, on the extent of steel renewal and repair methods, on a critical reserve strength assessment while the vessel has been en route, and on fire developing rapidly, fueled by the cargo. In the report, DNV's need to know include the following points. Fire exposure can degrade steel strength and toughness, increasing the risk of brittle behavior or loss of strength. An accurate post-fire assessment requires hardness testing, ASTM A370, and, when needed, destructive testing, to determine whether steel grade downgrading or structural repairs are necessary. DNV provides rapid emergency and post-fire support, including strength assessments and drone-based surveys for quick, safe evaluations. Find out more at dnv.com. Next up, the Norwegian Maritime Authority has sent out a warning following a significant increase in the marketing, sale and installation of counterfeit batteries for Jotron GMDSS products in recent years. Affected products include emergency position indicating radio beacons, radar and AIS, SART devices, as well as handheld GMDSS emergency VHF radios. Jotron added a guide on how to distinguish an original Jotron spare battery from a counterfeit Jotron battery. It also includes a list of Jotron products that are in production or obsolete, as well as details on certain products, plus each product's typical counterfeits. You can download the guide via our website. In our next report, IAX has published a recommendation to improve safety standards for lifting appliances, in line with SOLIS regulations covering both new and existing lifting appliances. Lifting appliances play a vital role in cargo handling and ship operations, yet their limited structural redundancy has long posed safety risks for crews and vessels. To address these hazards, the International Maritime Organization has introduced new mandatory requirements for the design, construction, installation, testing, examination, marking, maintenance, inspection and operation of lifting appliances under the SOLIS Convention. The new SOLIS regulations apply to all new lifting appliances installed on or after the 1st of January 2026, and to existing lifting appliances and associated loose gear no later than the first renewal survey on or after that date. Regulation 2-1, 3-13 introduces requirements for classification of standard design and construction, periodic load testing and thorough examinations for both new and existing lifting appliances. IAX strongly supports the inclusion of lifting appliances within the SOLIS Convention, recognizing the substantial improvement this brings to maritime safety. In support of this new framework and to facilitate consistent global implementation of the SOLIS regulations, IAX has developed a comprehensive recommendation on onboard lifting appliances guide. And for our final story, the future of engine retrofits will depend heavily on regulatory developments, says Lloyd's Register in its latest engine retrofit report. LR added the longer conventionally fueled vessels remain in service, the greater the pressure will be to retrofit them later to meet emissions targets, potentially compressing demand into a narrower and more costly timeframe. The 2026 update shows that 2025 delivered limited growth in announced retrofit projects, but significant progress in capability. A small number of high-profile conversions, including a successful methanol retrofit of a large two-stroke engine on the container vessel COSCO Shipping Libra, demonstrate that methanol conversions are technically viable at the deep-sea end of the market and moving towards repeatable solutions. The similarity between methanol and ethanol means that future methanol engines should be capable of using ethanol, while existing methanol engines could be converted relatively easily. Looking ahead, LR said the trajectory of the retrofit market will depend heavily on regulatory developments, particularly any progress on a global framework to incentivize zero and near-zero emission fuels. You can download the full report via www.lr.org. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.